Oh, and just a side note.
Yeah?
I can hear you farting.
You can hear me farting?
Yeah.
That's not me farting. That's my seat. What's the seat? Is it that noise? No, my seat's not that creaky. Is it that?
I heard something when you were talking way back at the beginning of it, and I was just like, "Oh, I can hear that." And there's no way of getting rid of that.
All right, okay, fair enough. Maybe I did fart. I do fart quite a lot.
I know. Right, going 3, 2, 1. Welcome, faithful listeners, to the newly revamped Devon Dice podcast. This is episode 44, sponsored by meeplescorner.co.uk, just the two of us, and cardboard. On this show, we like to talk a lot about board games, news that involves board games, and Kickstarters that we are backing. This episode was recorded on the 14th of January, 2018. Joel talks more about the Charterstone he is building. Lewis gloats about his epic win in Star Wars Rebellion. And stay tuned till the end, because there's a competition where you, the listener, can win a board game. I'm your host, Joel Wright, and joining me in the second seat tonight is Dr. Lewis Jones. Dr. Lewis Jones.
That's the one. Well, either or. By the way, you've kept me incognito.
Yeah, so this is now his fourth appearance on the show in a row.
Yeah.
So you're now really a integrated host on the podcast.
Gosh. I still don't feel like I know what I'm doing, but that's fine.
So I still don't know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for years. So, so Lewis is joining me. Sam can't make it. His house is upside down, twisted around and inside out. He's full on building work going on. He's living in his spare bedroom at the minute. So he's got no place to record or time at the minute. So, yep, it's just us two. And it's the first show of the year, which is new interesting. I hope you do like the new intro music. Do you like it, Lewis?
I do. I liked it. Which one did you go for?
Didn't you hear it? Fourth wall broken again. And we're just trying to try and mix things up a little bit and change how we do the show, trying to make a bit more different in our own way. Now we're in our third year of doing this podcast. I just wanted to mix it up a bit and just give it a bit of a freshen up. So it's going to be the same thing. We talk about games, we talk about news, and we talk about Kickstarters. We have some extra things going on probably, but we're going to just try and make it a bit different. Up until Thursday, I haven't played a game this year. And I still haven't brought a game, which is quite surprising. I don't know how it's going for you.
I've played a lot. Checking my stats, I think I've played about 25 games. Give me 2 seconds. Bring it up. I've had 24 plays of 7 unique games.
Wow. Mm. So, yeah. So, before the new year... before New Year, actually, I had a really busy Christmas from Christmas Eve up until the New Year. I was actually playing quite a lot of games, which for a Christmas period is actually quite strange for me because I don't know, the last few Christmas I've had, it's been a bit bleak on gaming, but this Christmas it was quite good. And I actually played three more games of Charterstone with the family. It's it's ramping up quite nicely and everyone's getting quite into it. So we started off, I think it was November, we played our first game. That took forever to play, just the first game, because what I didn't realise and I didn't think about is my wife's playing it, her boyfriend, and his girlfriend and the kids had their own charter. Excuse me.
It's good to invite your wife's boyfriend along.
Well, can't really argue. So they're playing, and none of them have played a worker placement game before. So that was a kind of, right, we've got to go right back to basics and explain what a worker placement is to them. And with Charterstone, it's pretty good because it goes right back to basics of a worker placement. There's not much going on right at the beginning. I mean, you've got your own little charter within this village, and that's your own area that you can only work on. And then you all start off with one place where everyone starts with, and that just gives out one resource. And you can go anywhere on the board, and there's six other locations you can go to that are different and unique. But it's real simple. You go to what someone goes to yours or someone else's charter and get a resource. That's it. Or you can go to the centre, which has kind of opening crates and building buildings and changing resources for money and things like that. And it's really simple, really basic, the first game.
I imagine Charterstone's perfectly ideal for people who aren't used to that genre or particularly into board gaming, because one of the big criticisms of it is that it starts off horrendously basic, and obviously you go through the whole campaign kind of thing, and a lot of people are saying the game at the end is absolutely brilliant, but the campaign's a bit of a gimmick, because all you're essentially doing is just adding on to make up to the point where you sort of finally get to that really good worker placement game at the end. But I guess if you're starting with people who don't know worker placements, I guess it's actually, that's that perfect thing that it hits.
Yeah, it's been perfect trying to introduce them into it. And now we're going to be playing game five, hopefully, in a week. Nice. It's really ramped up. I mean, our charters are busy as, like, I don't know. It's just so busy. There's so much going on.
How many games are there in a campaign?
12.
12. Okay. Oh, so you're nearly halfway through.
Nearly halfway, yeah. And as I said, it's already busy. It's already kind of like so much is coming into it. And as I said, you've got to get past the first two games. And quite literally, the first two games are one game split into two. Because you play the first game, and then it kind of says, well, you keep everything now that you've got in your personal stash, and you start another game with all that stuff. But you've got a little goal at the end of this second game. So you've got to technically treat those two games as one, get through those, and then it starts really building up. And things unlock in different ways and how people play it. So some people might unlock something different before someone else does, or they might never unlock something. I mean, there's still probably quite a lot we've not unlocked yet, and maybe we never will do. And it's really, really fun. And each game could play as quickly as an hour to 2 hours, depending how quick people are playing it. So
that's good game time, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think our first game took probably an hour and 45 minutes, but that's because they're not used to playing worker placement. It's so funny because like they'd be like, so how do I get over there then? So we just place your character there.
That's the classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never played worker placement before.
Yeah. What?
Do I have to roll or something to move over there?
Yeah.
No, you just place it there. That's your worker, and you place it. It's a worker placement.
Yeah, and this is mind blown. It's like, that seems too easy kind of thing. So it's not harsh. It's not brutal in any ways. I mean, if someone's in the spot you want to go, you can basically kick them out and put your peer person there. All it does
is there any comeback for that?
No, all it is an advantage for that player to have kind of an extra turn before they pull back all their...
They get their worker back, do they?
Mm-hmm. So
okay.
If all their workers are out on the board, then they have to then pull them all back, which is a turn lost. So if you bump someone out of a space, then they're technically getting an extra turn. But as the village starts building up with more and more buildings in it, it becomes a little bit more rarer that you will push someone out unless you really have to and wait for it. But
So what's its special thing then? Because it's sounding like a very typical worker place, something very special. Because it's a Jamie Stiegmeier game, isn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, and he made Scythe and
Euphoria.
In my head. No, the other one, the wine one.
Oh, Viticulture.
Viticulture, yeah, which is, I think, the best worker placement game, and it's got some really innovative, interesting things, you know, about deciding what time your workers wake up, and so basically setting turn order, but then you get a better bonus if you go later, and it's just got a lot, and if you get first to a space, you get your kind of good bonuses that are really quite interesting, and then splitting the year into two, so, you know, the first few actions can only be in the winter months, and then the rest are in the summer months, but you don't get your workers back until for each season. You only get the same workers for each year. So what has Charterstone got that's particularly different from other worker places?
Well, I mean, Charterstone lends its bumping mechanic from Euphoria, which I just said about. So in that is you're placing workers out and you can bump people out of the way and they get it back. And it's that same mechanic. I think what Charterstone brings is this whole crafting a Euro game together. Because you start off with an empty board and then you play and then you keep adding in new buildings that you like, that you would hope people would use, kind of thing. Because there is other things going on, and to tell you that someone's not played it would really spoil what gets added into this game. Yeah. So it's quite difficult like that. And you do come across some nice, I think there is some nice nuances that come in this by unlocking stuff. So it's not just
constantly changes, doesn't it? Each time you play it, it's almost like a different game.
Well, and it does lend to what kind of strategies you do to it. I mean, to say any more would spoil it, but I mean, it's not just the main focus is worker placement, getting your people out there, collecting resources, and building more stuff and getting more points. But there's other stuff that comes out that will do stuff.
Because I'm very interested in it. I'm just deciding when I'm going to take the leap.
Well, I mean, I've got a recharge pack already, ready to go, which I could break open now and play.
Didn't you
the
say
other
there was
side.
Something about it that we couldn't do it or something? There was something.
The only downside with the recharge pack is that you don't get charter boxes, which are basically your own little kind of top boxes for your player. So when you finish a game, you put everything that you've got and put it in this charter box, and then you also mark on the charter box your, like, how many wins you got or what you've done or things like that. But when the recharge box pack you get stickers that stick over the top of the previous
because it's quite clever, because they made the board double-sided, didn't they? So you could play more than one campaign. But they haven't given you everything, so you can't play two campaigns simultaneously. You can only do it once the first campaign's finished.
I'm slightly gutted they didn't just bring out tuck boxes that you can just have, kind of thing, because they could have been quite easy to fold out.
I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, they released an empty cardboard box besides, so...
You still can't get over that, can you?
Give Jamie a minute. He's the king of making some money.
Well, I've been on the internet trying to find templates to make my own tuck boxes, and either I have to pay for them or I'm not looking hard enough. So,
turn up at some point. Just send Jamie an email. I've had an email conversation with him before. He's pretty helpful, I'm sure.
So that's Charterstone, and look, really enjoying it. Really great. Great family game. I don't know if I would like to see it to the end to see if it really becomes a heavy worker placement, but I don't know. I think it's still going to stay medium and be quite good still. So
I think that's probably what you're after, isn't it? Although by the sounds of it, if it keeps building and building, it sounds like it could end up being quite a heavy worker placement, and I guess the way they've got around it is by the fact that you just introduce it to you slowly. I'd be interested to play the final game with you, because once you make that final board, just play it like a standard worker placement, can't you?
Well, that's what they said. So they said, "Oh, we should do expos or conventions, like a Charterstone grouping where people can swap their boards and they can play in between each other. And it's like, oh, that sounds a good idea. Or the final boards anyway. But what I do like is like Jamie Meyer is quite good at blogging and writing stuff. Yeah. And he put up a post about like Charterstone and why he didn't do it on Kickstarter and his fails and mistakes he's made with like going just routine route. And the reason why he didn't go to Kickstarter with this, not because he's out of Kickstarter altogether, but because of like the secrecy to it, it's a bit hard to put on there. And he said he said he had a great idea for stretch goals. Was one of them was you get this charter index, which is basically a massive magnetic tuck box that holds all the cards that are for the game. So when people open crates, you go in there, you find the numbers and you give them the cards. And he was wanting to put this, every time you open the box, it would sound out a trumpet triumph sound. I was like, that sounds cool, but would become really annoying through the game.
It's a really interesting point that he made about the fact that because it's legacy, you just have to give it all away. Because there was that just before Christmas, there was that Kickstarter for that. What was it? It was like had a really interesting mechanic to it. It was like Rise of the Guardians or not Rise, it was something like that. The Dawn of the Peacemakers, which was looked like it had a it sort of there was this kind of. You know, these kind of two sides battling away in this world, and you were the kind of peacemakers and you were kind of friends with both of them, and you basically had to sort of keep sort of going into sort of each sort of camp and basically try and do all you could to kind of stop the two sides from sort of fighting. And you did that by sort of deck manipulation and things like that, which looked sort of really quite an interesting game. But it obviously, it clearly had this sort of great legacy to it where sort of whole new kind of races were unlocked and all this kind of stuff. It looked like there was loads in it, but they didn't want to ruin it. So they only talked about sort of the first couple of rounds. And so it looked like you weren't getting a huge amount for your money. And clearly the game had significantly more depth than what it seemed like in the first game, because essentially we were talking about the first game, which is like, you know, your kind of intro. And obviously it got sort of deeper. And I was really interested in that, but it didn't fund. And I think that's, like you're saying, it's because when you've got a legacy type game and you without either reveal everything and then there's, you know, there's no sort of surprises and secrets, or, you know, people aren't going to see what they're going to get on Kickstarter.
That's it. Yeah, definitely. And leading on from that, Stonemaier Games announced the new and final expansion to Psy, The Rise of Fenris.
Yeah. Did you deliberately call it Psy?
Yeah.
I was about to sigh.
So this is as it said, is the final expansion that's going to come out for Psy, and it's not really a legacy game. It's a campaign modular expansion. So basically, there's 8 games in here that will create a story for Psy, and it's like an 8-episode campaign where you play through and it unlocks surprises and elements to add to Psy. And then you can play it, or you could just play it with any of the modules that come in it. So it's kind of like the Tuscany expansion for Viticulture, where you could have played through that.
That's a brilliant expansion.
Yeah, you could have played through that and added a new element to Viticulture as you played. And then once you're finished or throughout the game, you could just say, oh, I like this expansion and I like that expansion, but I don't like that one. So we cannot play with that. So it's like that. And it sounds pretty cool. Sounds like you're getting a lot of extras for it. Guidebook, 13 plastic miniatures, 62 wooden tokens, 2 custom dice, 5 tiles and 100 plus cardboard tokens.
Nice. So you're going to be getting it for your copy, Joel? Remember you got that really all singing, all dancing Kickstarter copy, didn't you?
Not anymore. No.
You sold it, didn't you? You sold your copy, didn't you?
I saw an opportunity and and I took it with hands wide open.
I think I liked it more than you, Scythe, but I agree it's not. It's no Viticulture. Viticulture is still J.B. Stiegmeier's crowning glory. That was a work of genius, that game.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So,
Braille. Before we move on, can we chat a little bit about what we're going to be looking forward to in the competition later on in the episode?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have we mentioned about what we're giving away?
No, we haven't.
No. So the prize for our competition this month is a brand new copy of Clank in Space, the big hit that came out at Essen last year, and then we actually talked about it a fair bit on the Essen podcast, which you can check out. And it's essentially a sort of tightening up of the rules and re-theming of Clank, the original fantasy themed game that has a deck building mechanic that also includes sort of movement on the boards, and sort of the theme in Clank in Space is you're trying to steal some artifacts, alien artifacts from this big alien overlord person on his ship. And it's really quite good, actually. I wasn't a massive fan of the original Clank, but I feel like the tightening up of the rules and the re-themings is really, really helped it. I think it's the better game.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, look forward to that and find out more later on in the show.
Yep.
So you talked about receiving your Gloomhaven and the Christmas show.
Yeah.
Have you finally got to play it?
I have, yes. I've now played five scenarios, I think. Yeah, sort of three down and four down a main line, and we did did a side one as well, which is quite good. I'm playing it with my wife, just the two of us in our little campaign. And so far so good. It's entertaining. I think there's enough thing. I mean, other people say about, oh, you level very slowly, but there are other things that you can unlock in the meantime. There's essentially sort of three main ways of improving your character, which is essentially leveling up, collecting these sort of bonuses that you get in scenario by doing extra sort of objectives, which then gives you an extra sort of bits to make you a bit better. And the last one is sort of by buying items in the town of Gloomhaven. And every time you finish a mission, you've always got something that you've been able to improve, make yourself slightly better, and you're always chasing one other thing. So that kind of keeps you entertained. I think the storyline is a bit light, and the gameplay is interesting. Although I don't know if we're in a bit of an anomaly at the minute, because it was reasonably challenging for the first couple. It felt like, you know, things were very, very tight, and it sort of came down to the last, you know, turn or two whether we'd do it or not. But we haven't actually lost a campaign yet, so lost a scenario yet. And certainly the last two, we've sort of had so much time left and been in such a strong position that we've sort of just kept one guy alive and then sort of gone round picking up coins so we could definitely get them all. So I don't know if that's because we're kind of at the maximum level we can be before we have to sort of increase the level of the game. We're playing a normal level. So I don't know if, you know, the second one of us goes up a level, which I think will be after the next scenario, we have to up the level of the game. So we're kind of at our kind of max level we can be before everybody start, all the creatures start getting a lot harder. So I don't know if that'll make it harder again. But I mean, I feel it certainly at the moment we're pretty strong.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, and it's actually feeling a fair bit sort of quite easy, which is a bit of a disappointment. But
I'm wondering if that's, you're playing it on normal mode, aren't you? You're not playing it on the easy. So it makes me wonder whether the two player is the difference in scaling to the four player, because we're struggling.
Yeah,
with the four player.
It doesn't seem to scale the same level. Because I mean, there's just not really that many people around, like in two player. Like you kind of open up the new door, you look at the next bit, you're like, oh gosh, look at those bits. And then you look closer, it's like, oh, well, only about two of them actually appear of those eight people there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, sure, one of them's an elite, but you think like, really? I mean, I could probably finish one of them off in one shot, and the other one can be do it, because I'm playing the Brute.
Right.
And there's, it's an opening character, so everyone can know that it's sort of coming. It's not a surprise. There's a card that essentially you start off with. It's one of the X cards that you can sort of, that you start off with to sort of muddle up your deck. And it's basically, it lets you do an attack equal to the amount of spaces you move that turn.
Yeah.
So then you can play like a move 4,
mm-hmm.
which is like one of your base cards. I mean, you do have a move 6 sometimes as a base card. And it's not a throwaway either. So you play like a move 4, and then it recommends that you start the game with this item called Boots of Striding, which give you +2. So then you instantly up to
6
damage. And so you just charge in, just smack them up for 6 damage. And, you know, most enemies, that's probably going to have, you know, taken away at least sort of half their life. A couple of times, it's just absolutely obliterated them. Even sort of the odd ones with shields and things. So it's... yeah, and because it's not a throwaway one, you just keep getting it back. I keep looking at it again. Like, is this supposed to be thrown away? Because it's very good. but yeah, so I just sort of keep combining it. And then there's so many combos they can do. And not just that. So that, I think there's a +3 move with jump that the Brute can do. And then that makes sort of wind, and that combines perfectly with my wife, who's a spell weaver, who then gets, with her thing, gets to add +2 to her attacks for that turn and stuff. And we just end up just walking to a room and sort of clear it. I mean, I think the last one we played, we got to, so there's 3 rooms, and we got to the final room that had sort of 2 bosses in, and we got to the final room before I'd even taken a knock.
Right.
Not like as in, because I'm the Brute, so I've got a shed load of shields.
Yeah.
As in nobody had landed a punch on me. Like,
wow.
I just run up to them, take them down, next. Like it was, yeah. So I was basically untouched. So I could go into the final room. And I just basically stood there tanking away with my shields and just whipping out all my throwaways because I've been saving them.
Just checking, you are drawing a card for each attack you do on a person.
Yeah.
And you're drawing a card for each enemy that attacks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's a common mistake people do.
Yeah, yeah.
Just draw one card and that goes for all their attack.
Yeah.
And the same with the enemies, they just draw one card.
No, we do it for each individual person involved in the attack.
Because you're,
If it's an area, and then every enemy gets, when they do an attack, gets to draw a card. I don't know, just seems to be going pretty well. As I say, I think we're going to notice a big difference, but we're both about to level up again, so that's going to give us a more stuff. But then who knows, the enemies may get a lot harder after this next scenario. But as I say, it was supposed to be a boss scenario as well, which, I mean, we walked it, and I think in the end, I think I did end up with about 5 life left, but that's because I didn't bother doing anything exciting, because I basically had full health from the start. I just went in and just tanked, just stood there and made sure they always hit me. So there's 2 of them constantly hitting me, and with fairly large attacks, and it just, you know, I didn't even need to put out any shields and stuff to stop it, because I could just take the damage. My wife was just sort of picking them off from range. But yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if we're just. I think apparently, looking on Board Game Geek, the Brute and the Spellweaver are a pretty strong combo. So I think we didn't do that deliberately. It was just sort of what we both sort of felt like we'd do, and then we just, but we'll see what happens.
So yeah, talking of Board Game Geek, the big news going into this year is that Gloomhaven has taken the number one spot.
Yes,
which is quite amazing. One, it's a Kickstarter game, which has never been done so far. And two, I mean, it's only a few people have this so far. I think now the second wave of people are getting it. Well, you've got yours, aren't they?
Yeah, I think there's almost sort of 70,000 or something have been delivered in the second wave. And I've had mine. Most of North America had theirs. Pretty much all of Europe's been delivered. So that's kind of... it's kind of good, 70,000 copies actually out there now, not counting the first Kickstarter. So I think there's a fair few people have got it and rated it.
Yeah, I mean, it's got an average rating of 9.02. So that's
that
not
strong.
It is.
I haven't rated mine yet.
Haven't you?
No, I don't know where it's going to go. At the moment, it's kind of 7-8, that sort of region. But I'm hoping it'll pick up. It's because, you know, we haven't even retired one character yet, or, you know, done more than five scenarios.
Oh, I don't think you'll retire one character for a while yet.
Yeah. Well, I'm halfway there.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Wow. I've kind of put mine as, well, this ain't going to happen for a long time in my character. Because usually you've got a couple of things to do, haven't you? And it's just like,
I had my 2-1s at the start, and one of them, like, it was talking like a different language. It was talking about stuff. I was like, I literally have no idea even how to do that. So I'm just not going to have that one. I'm going to have this one that I can actually start doing now.
It's amazing that it's got that high and people are absolutely loving it.
I mean, it ticks a lot of boxes, isn't it? People love fantasy, and there's a lot, you know, there's a big crowd of people who also really like their role-playing as well, isn't there? And it's got an element of that. I'd say it's more of a hand management sort of Euro game. I think it could have had better kind of tactics included in it. It's the fact that everywhere's got line of sight, basically. Basically, nothing blocks line of sight. So it's like,
certain stuff does.
Yeah, like what?
Certain objects do.
Yeah. The walls do.
Well, the walls do, yeah, of course. But there's certain bits that do block, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I remember that as being a...
You know, other characters don't, so you can't sort of hide behind other characters. And if you look at the line of sight rules, it's like one corner to another corner. So even bits you'd be like, oh, there's no way you can hit that. It's like, oh, no, actually, if you draw a straight line, that corner does connect to that corner. I think it could have done with a bit of, Star Wars Imperial Assault or something? What is it called? Imperial Assault. You know, I think in Imperial Assault, you have to have one of your corners to two of theirs or something, or two of yours to one of theirs. And I think that... They could have done with doing that just so you can, because some of them you have a look at and you think there's no way you could hit that without any kind of negative, but that's line of sight. Yeah, good.
I think they just wanted to keep it really simple. I mean, the rules are quite in depth as it is. So.
They are, yeah. It's quite a complicated game.
I don't think we've played a game to the exact rules yet.
I think it is hard. Sometimes I come out of it and go, was that the right decision? I don't know.
I think the last game we were playing, I literally went through the rule book myself and made notes of like, right, we've not been doing this right and we've not done this right. And I've messaged them because we've got a little Facebook group saying, right, when we get back to it, when we do get back to it, there's quite a few things we've been doing wrong. So I think that's going to change up a little bit. I mean, there's nothing game breaking. But certain things was like if they're poisoned, then they lose extra health or something like that. And then we were doing that.
All attacks on them are +1. Yeah.
Yeah. But then we were also doing that if they were wounded and because they lose a health at the beginning of round. Yeah, so they took another one off of that. Then I read
technically it's not the beginning of their round, it's the beginning of their turn.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also quite key. Yeah, you're going to get confused with that because it can confuse things up as well. Yeah.
So, I mean, the very first game, we were doing exactly what I just asked you was we were drawing only one card per attack over multiple. And then I read through it, it was like, oh, that's wrong. That changes everything, kind of thing.
Yeah, I knew about that. So the first game that we played, that's what probably why the quiz level seemed so ridiculously hard, was... If you draw their attack card and it's got like a shield on it, we were playing that was in effect straight away.
Right.
Whereas actually it takes effect from their turn onwards. So if you go before them, then you don't have to include that new shield.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ah, so they're not shielded if you attack them before then?
So that's why initiative becomes
maybe
way
that's something
more
else
important.
I've picked up. Okay.
Yeah. that made things a lot harder. But then when we realised that, things became a lot easier. But, it's a very complicated game. I think it's fun. Like, we're enjoying it. Both my wife and I are both having a good time enjoying it. And we kind of like that kind of campaign story that the two of us can just work through together. It's no Mechs versus Minions. That I can tell you for free. But you know, I think it's going up in my estimations. I think when the bad guys get harder, and it does say in the rule book, you can, if you find it too easy, you can just choose to go up a level as well. And when you go up a level, you get more gold and you get more experience and stuff anyway. So that's always positive. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think, by the what we've been working out, our next game's not going to be until March at this rate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's why when I said to you when I got it, it was unfortunately never to play with it. Like, you know, you guys, it would have to be my wife and I, because there's two of us always at home, and we can find an evening a week to play a game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to pick up my own copy at this rate and just either play it solo or...
Yeah, I've got the solo scenarios if you want to borrow them.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I'm really gutted I can't get it played more, but... Hey,
yeah,
it's what happens.
It's a good game. I think it's a good game. It ticks the boxes, I think, for an activity that my wife and I can do, and I like that. Whether it's the greatest game in the world, whether it should be at number one in Board Game Geek, for me, certainly not at the moment, and I don't think it's going to get there for me, in even once we've completed it. No matter how much I enjoy it, it's not a number one game for me, but I can see why it's gone up there. But it's like, you know, Pandemic Legacy was number one for a few months, and that game's bloody awful. So
it's not that awful.
No, in fairness, it's purely because I love the original Pandemic and overplayed it. So by the time that Pandemic Legacy came out, I was much less interested in playing repeated games because I'd already played far too many. I think if I just started with Pandemic Legacy, I'd probably be with everyone else saying it's the greatest game ever.
But we're going to finish it one day.
We are, yeah. I'll prepare them. I'll steel myself.
Right, good. So talking of Kickstarters, I've actually backed my first Kickstarter of the year.
Have you already?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was hoping that I wasn't going to back anything, but this I had to. It looks really cool.
Yeah.
It was on Tom Vassell's top 10 anticipated games of 2018. And it's called Western Legends. This is the first creation of Colossal Games. And it's a sandbox Western game, which sounds cool in itself. So it's basically Red Dead Redemption in a way.
Yeah.
Board game style. So it's 2 to 6 players, which is another bonus, and they say you can play this in 90 minutes, no matter the amount of people in it, which will have to be seen to be believed. But it's basically you are taking on one of the old classic heroes, avatars of the Western world, and trying to make a name for yourself. By doing whatever you like in this arena they've created. It looks really good. It starts off, you've got 12 characters to choose from. Each character has their own kind of personal goals in life. And you've got this big map of a Western front with two towns, a river, a mountainside, a train track, mines, ranches, all going on, and you can move through these and do different activities to earn yourself legendary points. And when someone reaches a certain amount of legendary points, the game will end, and whoever's got the most at the end of the game wins, which sounds really cool. It's coming with a few miniatures, so of course Kickstarter, it's got to have some miniatures. So the basic miniatures...
Can't have a Kickstarter without miniatures.
Well, that's it. I mean, might as well not put it on Kickstarter if you've not got miniatures.
Yeah, no one's going to back it when you've got a miniature.
So you get miniatures and you get plastic rings to clip on it so you know your colour. It's got two expansions that you can already get.
And you got them both?
Yeah. And... one expansion is actually for the Kickstarter stretch goals that they're adding on. So every time they're adding stretch goals, it's going into this expansion. So that kind of says to me that they will put this out to the retail market afterwards. Can't see any exclusive stuff going on.
That's good. Nothing,
which is a bonus. So it's not like you have to back this. I might be wrong. I am just trying to flick through quickly. No, I can't see any exclusive stuff. But it looks really cool. I mean, the cool thing about it is that it uses this 52-card action deck. It's basically, it looks like poker cards. They are all poker cards in a way. So twos to tens, royals and aces. And each card also has some kind of text on it. So it might have an action on it that you can perform with this card, or it might have like a pro or con for using the card when you're in combat or doing something else with a card. And you actually can go to the town and play poker as a little side game to earn some money. And you use your cards in your hand as a poker game. There's story cards going on. So when you, it basically is like a little bit of text. And when you meet that one of the goals on it, you put one of your cubes on it. When it fills up, the card flips over and tells your story or what's going on. And then I think it might give options or stuff like that, ups the ante a bit. And then there's a general store which you can go to and buy gear and items and stuff like that. And yeah, it looks pretty cool. I'm quite looking forward to it. If you want to back it, and go for the legendary pledge, so this will get you the core game and the two expansions, which includes all the stretch goals, it will cost you $75. I am just bringing it up. So $90 with shipping. It's about £65 it's working out to be.
It's not too bad, is it?
Not too bad for what it is at the minute. And more stuff's been...
Some Kickstarters as well, because, you know, by the time you add on the expansions and stuff, you're up to hundreds of dollars, aren't you? And it's ridiculous.
So, I mean, it's already funded. It's kind of stagnated out now. It was, like, instantly when it was released, it hit funding and went past the 100,000 mark. And it's kind of leveled out a bit now. I do know
about a quarter of a million though.
Yeah, I do know there's a big kind of Facebook group going on that are like getting multiple copies shipped in to save on some money. So if anyone wants any details of that, then drop me a link or go on Facebook page on the trading, buying and trading site and find the link there. And you've got about 14 days to go while this is still going. It will end on Monday, the 29th of January.
I shall look forward to playing yours.
Like you always do.
As always.
I have so many Kickstarters on the way to me at the minute.
Do you?
Yeah.
How do you have so many? I think I've only got one left, and that is the expansion for the Red Raven game, Near and Far. I got the Amber Mines expansion for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I should have...
Red Raven.
Power Ship should be coming to me.
Okay, yeah.
Zombie Tsunami, which I don't know why I backed that.
Zombie Tsunami, what were you...
Yeah, I don't know why I backed that. I've got that. Okay. And what's the other one I'm meant to be getting? Oh, Heavy Hitters.
Is that mechs one?
Yeah, big mechs one.
Yeah.
I'm nearly up to date, actually.
Oh, you're not too bad. Yeah, I know I was behind before Christmas, and I got a shed load at about Christmas time, and my wife said, oh, I thought we only get one game a month now. And I was like, no, I do. I ordered these, like, one of them was like 2 years ago. They haven't all come together.
She just looks, I think I got one through last year, just before Christmas, and the wife just looked at me and goes, why are you buying stuff before Christmas? It's a Kickstarter.
It's a Kickstarter. You can't buy this. You can't buy this. Not unless you planned my Christmas present 18 months ago.
Yeah. She just looked at me and shook her head. It's like, I give up. So that's the Kickstarter announcement.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. What are we going on to next? Last thing.
We're going to talk about Thursday, Joel.
Oh, yeah. Go on in.
So Joel, it was just Joel and I on Thursday, and we played a game of... Star Wars Rebellion, which is a very interesting two-player game by Fantasy Flight. I think officially it goes up to four player, but it's a two-player game. it was kind of a rematch because we played one game before, the two of us, and I'd been the Imperials and he'd been the Rebels, and I'd got incredibly lucky right at the beginning and worked out where his base was for about turn two, and then did a bit of feinting for a while, and then just went and trounced him, unfortunately. And this time we played in the reverse, and it was a very close game, wasn't it?
Yes, very close.
So much so that I think it was the final turn that we played. I think there was about another four turns to play at that point, and you had the biggest fleet ever sitting in the square right next to my base with no defences.
It was a kind of a great move. I mean, I constantly kept one of his leaders captive, which was really annoying him. And I knew he had that objective card in his hand. And then I got the card, which basically let his leader go. And then basically his leader led me to practically where their base was, which was literally next to one of my fleets. So I had two options. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go to this near one. And I sent in a scouting party, and yeah, there it was.
That was a big error.
I should have just sent my fleet in, really. But I just didn't want to be so far away from the other place. And I thought, well, exactly. I've still got another turn. I can do this. He's not that close.
Still about three or four turns,
And I thought, he's not that close to winning.
For those people who don't know, so Star Wars Rebellion is an asymmetrical sort of cat and mouse game where one person plays the Empire in Star Wars, and the other player plays the Rebels, and the Empire is ridiculously powerful, has got a million units, can do just about anything it wants, but they've got a limited amount of time to find which planet on the board the Rebel player has decided is their secret hidden base. And go and destroy every unit that's hidden in that sort of base. And each turn, the Empire player gets sort of two cards from a deck of cards, which has a list of all the planets on. And so each turn, the Empire player knows sort of two planets more that the Rebel base isn't, essentially, because the Rebel player's taken that card out of the deck. And so as the game goes on, there's less and less places that the Rebel base could be. But the Rebel player can kind of... I think the game starts off with 14 turns. And the Rebel player can do certain things. And if they do them, get these objective cards, then they get to move the kind of the end of the game forward. So I think we finished round seven, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Because I blew up the Death Star.
Yeah, you got that sneaky in. And then... I mean, my biggest mistake, and I think this literally cost me the game, is that I let go of the leader and I didn't capture another one out of choice.
Well, that would have done it for you.
If I captured his leader, he wouldn't have been able to score 1 point, and there would still have been a point between the markers.
Still have been one more turn for you to have another go at me.
Next turn, I could just move. I had a massive fleet in one square next to it, but because of already... Because you already got a leader in that place, you can't move the fleet out, which is a rule in the game.
I was so furious with myself because I had done so much better than I thought I was going to do. Like, half the galaxy was pretty much a no-go zone for you. Like, my fleet was strong enough that unless you basically bought your entire fleet from the other side of the galaxy, which had taken about 10 turns, you couldn't deploy anything, you couldn't get anything on that side. The error that I'd made was I'd got a really, really cocky pick of where to put my base, which was right next to your fleet on the other side of the galaxy. And so I'd picked off your fleets one by one, and I just made that I owned half the galaxy. But the problem was, and I had a really strong fleet, but the problem was my base was on the other side of the galaxy, right next to your ridiculous three massive fleets. And it was really frustrating. And then I was thinking all was fine, and then you played that ridiculous card that made me have to tell you where the area that my base was in. And it just so happened, because I was already in the middle of your area, you already owned two of the four planets that it could have been. So you only had a choice of two. Luckily, you picked wrong and just were just double-checking on the other one. Just sent a tiny little scouting party, which meant you couldn't move the whole massive fleet in.
Yeah. I think my trouble is when I play the Imperials, I am, because you get such great cards.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get the project cards as well. It's like, I want to do this all. but then it leaves me no room to move my fleet around to find you.
Yeah, so that's a big thing. I did notice that. Like, you were going whole turns with basically not moving your fleet, and I was like, you do realize that's like a whole extra search. It's like you need to go. I was thinking, why is he not doing that? And like, I think I had that big planet that was producing me my big cruisers as well, which are the same as your star destroyers. And I think you could have got there in about the second or third turn, so I could only have got one production out of it. I think I took it on the first turn. Mm-hmm. But if you'd have sent your fleet up there earlier, I'd never been able to have defended it essentially, and so you'd have stopped my production. But as it was, I kept on producing those cruisers from there, and that gave me just enough. And I did just enough picking off a couple of your star destroyers at like opportune moments for the cards, and also I managed to blow up that one that was on the production line as well, didn't I?
Yeah, the superstar destroyers. Yes.
Yeah, no, I didn't destroy your superstar destroyer.
Yeah,
it was your standard.
Oh, no.
Standard star destroyer. Yeah. You only just got your superstar destroyer on the last turn. It was going to go horribly wrong for me, basically, if that game had lasted one more turn. And I was looking at my hand going, right, I can do that. I can do that. And I was like, if his last person doesn't capture my leader, I can do it. Please don't capture my leader. And then you didn't. I was like, yes.
It's such a bad schoolboy error. I was like, why didn't I do it? And I think I contemplated over it.
People left as well.
I know.
You'd captured one of my leaders, converted one of my leaders, captured another leader. It's just, you had so many more people than me. It was just ridiculous. I could barely do anything.
It's like, every time it's like, right, I'll capture him again. It's like, for crying out loud, leave my people alone. And I was like, and he's converted to the dark side. And it's like, so you're even one up now against me.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You stole Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That's brilliant. I love it, but I can't win it because I make it.
It was one of probably the best two player game I think I've ever played. I mean, that game, we were playing for quite a long time. I didn't even look up until I realized it was 10:30 and we'd been playing for about 3 hours. And I was like, oh God, out of time. Goodness, right, we better.
It's gone 12 by the time we finished.
Sorry?
It's gone 12 by the time we finished.
It was, yeah.
It's a good thing we weren't playing in the pub.
Yeah, good job, we'd have been kicked out. But it was so good. I was just feeling like I was, well, I don't know, because I felt like you were dominating cards-wise. But on the board, I'd actually made this whole kind of, I'd done quite well because I'd done this whole kind of no-go zone. Mm. But I hadn't, I had destroyed the Death Star, but I hadn't done a huge amount in terms of moving that little clockwork timer thing down.
Yeah.
It was only that final turn. I think I moved it 3 down. It was 3 in that final move.
Right. Yes, you did.
Because I completed 3 objectives right at the end of that final turn. And that was just enough.
And then it has to move up one at the end of the turn anyway. And it's
So it moved up to turn 7 and it matched it. And thank you very much. I'll take the win.
Lucky.
Oh, it's so lucky. Well, but it was so frustrating because I was in quite a good position. And if I had just put my base behind my lines, or if I just moved my base, I don't know why I hadn't. Because the whole time I was doing really well, I was looking at it going, oh, it's all good. But you could have, even without finding out where it was, you could have just by accident decided to move through that system and found me, and I would have been able to do nothing about it.
I think that's the clever thing with it, is like, you could just walk around a planet and not realise, oh, I should have gone there straight away. Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Well, you had 2 fleets by it on your first turn. You could have won on the first turn if you decided to go a different way. I was like, oh, this is massively cocky and risky.
Definitely
worth it.
Definitely.
That's how I play. Seemed to pay off.
From one epic game to one very old epic game.
Oh, yeah.
To news that Games Workshop is working with Pegaspill now to bring out their old classic Talisman Adventure board game. And it actually celebrates its 35th anniversary. So it's older than you, Lewis.
It is older than me, yeah.
That makes me feel old. It's a couple of years younger than me. Talisman. You've never heard of this, have you, when I was talking about it first?
I don't think so. I couldn't really place it. I just had a look at a few pictures when you mentioned it, and it's vaguely ringing a bell when I saw it was Games Workshop, because I think I did when I in my sort of gosh, I must have been about 10, 11. I got in quite into Warhammer and spent some time in Games Workshop places. So I feel like I recognise the kind of box art, but I couldn't tell you more about it.
So yeah, I mean this was first released back in 1983. And it wow. has people traveling around a magical world, finding ancient relics and fantastic creatures, and performing epic quests. And it kind of resembles a bit like Monopoly in a way. If you've never seen it, it's basically a lot of squares around the edge of the board, and you roll dice, and you can either move one way or move the other way and land on stuff and get stuff. And then once you've performed enough epic stuff, you can move into the next level. So there's another ring of square spaces inside that, and then there's another one inside that, and whoever gets the center wins the game, and that's basically it. I've not played it, but I played the new version. Oh, what's it called? It was based on the 40K universe.
Space Hulk?
No. It'll come to me, and I'll drop it in here in a minute.
It was Relic.
But basically, Fantasy Flight had this, and they bought out the second edition while they had the rights. But then when Games Workshop took away all their stuff from them, they basically lost it all. They can't produce it anymore. And so now Pegasus Spiel is bringing out the third edition and releasing...
So Games Workshop wouldn't sell the rights to Fantasy Flight, but they would sell the rights to Pegasus Spiel.
So... they did sell the rights to Fantasy Flight at first.
Yeah.
But they took...
then they took them away, didn't they?
Took it all away.
Because I remember there was a Warhammer game as well, wasn't there? That was stopped. And then, is it Fury of Dracula as well?
Yeah. So all Games Workshop titles were took away. For some reason, they had a big...
I thought they were doing that because they were losing revenue themselves and so decided they wanted to basically reclaim all their line. So why have they now sold this to Pegasus Spiel?
They've sold it out to different branches stuff now. I think WizKids have got a line from them now. I can't remember what line it is. I can find it, I'll drop it in here. So they're not. I don't think they're putting all their fingers in one pie. They're just putting it now.
Fantasy Flight weren't paying enough, is what they decided. Is it?
I think the Fantasy Flight might have upset them with what they were bringing out, because they were bringing out the Rune Wars miniature game, which then kind of is the same line as their warring game they had as well. So there might have been loads of stuff going on in the background we don't even know about.
Who knows?
I think, yeah, just had a bit of an argument, and they just unfriended each other on Facebook, and then it was like, yeah, who wants these titles now? So,
well, if it's Facebook official, mate, then you know it's serious.
That's... yeah. German 4th edition. Oh, wow. So they're at the 4th edition on the 1st now. I do apologise.
But it says 4 new games based on Talisman. But Talisman had shed loads of expansions for it, hasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Yeah, so that's probably what they mean.
So maybe. We'll see. They're coming out this year. We'll see what happens.
Cool.
So one of your Christmas presents you got this year, or for Christmas, was Celestia.
Celestia, yes, and my most played game of the last 30 days.
Wow.
Many, many games of it. Yes. So Celestia, if people don't know, is one of the two really big kind of main kind of push your luck games that are kind of out there. It's set in the world of Celestia, for your Jonathan Swift fans out there. So that's obviously from Gulliver's Travels. Celestia was the world that he couldn't find when he was on his travels. It's kind of got a bit of a steampunk vibe to it. It's got this really, really nice sort of table presence. You kind of got this kind of cardboard pop out kind of floating airship, and you're all passengers on this airship, and you're kind of going to all these distant lands, collecting artifacts that are worth different levels of points. The further up you get in your journey, the higher the points that you're going to get. And it's basically you're going to keep playing lots and lots of journeys until somebody kind of collects enough cards that add up to 50 points. It's got quite a funky mechanic to it where there's a bit more that you have to kind of think about. There's sort of one person who's the captain who has to sort of roll dice, which basically give you sort of corresponding symbols and colours that you kind of match to cards in your hand. And everybody is basically making a decision about whether they think you have got those cards or you haven't. And there's a bit more bump to it than that. But essentially, it's as simple as that. It's a push your luck. The longer you can stay on, the better. However, you can't get off if you're the captain. So that just adds a different sort of little level where, you know, sometimes you jump off because even though you think the person who's currently the captain's got it, you get a bit worried that you're certainly not going to have whatever you roll, so you get off early. And sometimes that can save you because it turns out that person didn't have it, and sometimes that means that everybody else sails on without you and gets the big points. I've played it with my family over Christmas, my wife and my wife's family as well, and everyone has a really good time. I think they particularly like it because I'm not particularly good at it. So I don't win all the time. So I think that's one of the things that really makes it good for them. But it's very much in the same vein as Ink and Gold, which is the other, or Diamant, isn't it?
Diamant, yeah.
Yeah, that was the original name of it, now re-released as Ink and Gold.
Ah, but it's gone back to Diamant because Yellow Games brought it out as Diamant.
They've re-released it again, have they?
Yeah.
Was it always Ink and Gold and then became Diamond?
It might have been always Ink and Gold.
Yeah, okay.
See, I thought you knew more than me, but yeah.
Yeah, no, you're probably right there. I can never remember which, you know. It's all whatever, isn't it? But I think that's a very fun game. And they're both of a very similar vein. You've played them both, haven't you, Joel? What do you think of them?
Yeah, they are very similar. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I could pick between the two, but they both do the same thing in a way, except for one, you're rolling dice. Well, one person's rolling dice and everyone's deciding whether to stay in. And the other one is basically you're turning over a card or a tile and then you're deciding whether to stay in or make a run for it. I think in one way, Ink and Gold's probably better to introduce to new people to it. Because Celestia, I know some people can sit there and work out what people should have and will have in their hands.
I can't,
but I've played it with people that that do that, and it's really frustrating. But I don't know. I think, I couldn't pick between the two.
I think Diamant or Ink and Gold, I think that's the more pure game. That one's got a lot more, it's the more pure, you know, push your luck kind of element to it. So, you know, in Celestia, you can get two people can get off at the same spot and they can get different amounts.
Yeah.
Because there's that deck of cards that you draw at each kind of level.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a lot more sort of variability and randomness to Celestia, you know, and, you know, somebody can roll, you know, three blanks. Somebody else could be only rolling sort of two dice and then they roll two blacks or something, which they're clearly not going to have. And, you know, and that can really scupper you for the captain because you can't get off. So I think there's much more variability and much more randomness to Celestia. I think Diamant is the more pure game. It's very clever. It's much, much simpler and much more clever. But I think for me, Celestia probably takes it on the kind of theatre aspect of it. I think there's a bit more of a meatier game kind of in Celestia. You can have some sort of table talk about, you know, looking someone in the eye, like, have you got it? Have you got it? Tell me the truth kind of thing.
Mm.
And, you know, watching people squirm. And, you know, you sometimes get some captains going, don't worry, guys, I've got it. It's absolutely fine. And then it's like, they haven't got it. And sometimes, like, I haven't got it. I'd get off, guys. I really haven't got it. And gets around to them. It's like, I told you I hadn't got it.
I think the difference between the two is where Ink and Gold, it is a pure, simple, You either choose to stay in or you go out, and you also do it simultaneous to everyone. So you all pick and then you reveal at the same time. And a good little variant to do is that everyone has to shout ink and gold if they're staying in.
Is that what you do?
Or you keep quiet if you're actually making a run for it. And then you basically, if you're making a run for it, you collect points on the way back if there's anything.
That's the thing as well, because sometimes, that game's quite clever, because sometimes actually running can be
more
quite
profitable.
Lucrative.
Yeah. But with the Celestia, you've got that, because you've got a deck of cards. Not only are they have symbols, but you also get like the kind of ability
special
cards,
powers,
which either lets you jump out just before it crashes, or jump back in, or push someone out. That's always a good
push me off. Literally, I think that card was played, gosh, 15 times, and I think maybe twice it wasn't me that got pushed off. Just got used to it. Cost me quite a few games.
Shall I leave now before you push?
it
does add that bit of giving you a bit more options to it. So but it does lend that thing to people get the card. It's like, oh, how does that work again, kind of thing. And they can't say anything to anyone because...
No, I know. They have to ask for the rule book. And then for some reason, all my family decide to stare at the tiny little symbol in the corner rather than looking at the picture on the card. They come and go, I can't see which one this is. Like, well, look at the picture. Is it pink with arrows on it? Because, I mean, it's like, no, it's little white cubes. So, what do you mean little white cubes? Like, look at the picture on the card. It's too small. Like, look at the picture.
This is where having text on the card is really helpful for these sort of games, because it's secret information. People can't ask. And as soon as someone asks for the rule book, it's like,
you know they've got a special card.
Yeah.
But also, it's just hard to remember what they all do. Like, even the one, like, if you just had some sort of word that, you know, even half a sentence that just reminded people, like, push off or re-roll or, you know, it would have been helpful because, you know, the first few games that I played, I couldn't remember which was which and which did what. And I had to look it up as well, even though I knew what the available abilities were. I just couldn't remember which was which.
There is a printout you can get for it.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's faff, isn't it? But overall, I must say, so there's times with Celestia when, you know, I got off at one spot and I've got, the very last game I played, I lost with a score of 54 because the person who won had a score of 55. I mean, 54 is normally beyond a winning score. Mm. Like, you normally win with, like, you know, 51, 52. But more annoyingly, that person had got off two stops before me, and I'd gone on two further stops before taking my card. And I think they got a 12, and I got I can't remember exactly what, maybe a 9 or something. They got a disproportionately high, and I got a disproportionately low card, even though I was actually further down. So it wasn't even like we got off at the same spot, and they got more than me. It was the fact that I got off further down. Mm-hmm. And it was very frustrating. However, I do like Ink and Gold, but for me, Celestia is the winner of those two. It looks nicer. I think the theming is greater. There's way more sort of theatre to it. I think if you look at it pure game wise, I think pure game Ink and Gold is actually probably the tighter, better kind of mechanic wise. But I just enjoy. So I think it's good fun.
Diamond or Ink and Gold has the benefit of having up to 8 players, where Celestia only goes to 6. So
does Diamond go to 8? I didn't realise that. Oh, does that swing it? To be honest, it's not often I have more than 6 players. I've played quite a few 6 players games of Celestia. And 6 is generally the kind of max level kind of that.
I think I would still
like them both. I like them both enough that I probably will buy Ink and Gold as well.
Mm. See, I played the new Diamonds. I don't know if I like the new implement they brought out. It's really simple.
How's it different?
I don't know. I'm trying to think now. Ink and Gold, you have to each round add a couple of cards to the deck, more treasure, where Diamante is just, it's all the one deck, and then something's removed, a trap is removed by the person last out or something like that. Might happen in Ink and Gold as well. I don't know.
No, Ink and Gold, you just add in that, you add in the extra treasure, don't you? Just to keep track of the rounds, and then they're worth like extra money. As if you run away, if you're the only person to run away, then you get the treasures.
Yeah,
but you have to be the only person to run.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think I still stick with Celestia as the one I prefer to play.
Yeah, me too, I think. Well,
but,
yeah.
I mean, but if it's all new people and like novice gamers and things like that, Diamond, Ink and Gold is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, they're both cracking and they're both really good, that kind of that introduction to that kind of push-your-luck kind of mechanic. Mm-hmm. And they're probably the best of the push-your-lucks. What are the other big push-your-lucks? I can't think of...
Oh, there's loads of them.
There's loads of them, but I can't think of another top of my
Zombie
head.
Dice.
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, that's quite a good one as well. Oh, Welcome to the Dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there's quite a few. Well, I think those two are definitely the top.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So we're both on Celestia?
Yeah.
Is that the winner?
That's my vote. Yeah, that's my vote. It does take it, which it shouldn't, because I'm normally all about mechanics and purity, but it does actually take it.
Let us know on the Facebook page or Twitter of your favourite out of the two, Celestia or Ink and Gold.
Yeah, tell us we're wrong.
talking of gold, how about finding some treasure on Treasure Island?
Sounds good.
Matagot is bringing out Treasure Island. Now, me and you are both fans of Black Sails, aren't we?
Yes, and Treasure Island, the book. Love that as well.
So Black Sails, if you haven't seen, you can see it on Amazon Prime. It's a prequel, isn't it, really, to Treasure Island, but they use real life historical characters in the story, don't they? Mm-hmm. And it's really
so good.
Me and the wife binge watched 4 seasons in a matter of a few months.
Yeah. In months. It took you months. What were you doing?
We did have Essen. And then we did. And she does work.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you were watching it at Essen, weren't you? I remember because I was desperate to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
You went, no.
I think we were on season 3 when we went to Essen.
That was it. Yeah. It's so good. Probably the best TV program ever made.
Matagot's bringing out this Treasure Island, and it's basically taken from the books. It's a bluffing adventure game where one person will be Long John and they're trying to mislead the others in search of his treasure, and then it will climax at the end where Long John will try and make his escape, trying to run off with the booty himself. It's from the designer of Mark Pinquin. Designed by Mark Paquin.
Paquin.
So he made Yamate, that was out last year. The illustration is by Vincent Dutrait. And he done the art for Broom Service, but he also done the art for New York 1901, a new game I've just got out called Alexandria. So he's an exceptional artist. I love his work.
Looks nice.
Yeah, it really adds to this game, I think. Kind of the old kind of 1960s kind of book cover, in a way. So
I like Matagot as well. Matagot. Most of their games are pretty strong winners.
They made our number one game of 2017, didn't they?
They did indeed.
Big up for them.
No, it's good. Yes,
so this
indeed.
Game is for 2 to 6 players. Each game will take about 45 minutes, which is not bad. Seems a little short, but we'll see. Yeah. It looks really good. I mean, I only got a front cover picture at the minute. No, there's not much more than that.
No, I was just looking. There's nothing else there, mate.
Picture. Is that Long John Silver? Probably.
Yeah, he's there. He's there on the right of the main character, isn't he?
But there's another picture. Character. Yeah. Okay, anyway, so yes, that's Treasure Island coming from Matagot. Looking forward to that beauty.
Sounds exciting.
So I just want to quickly finish off with a last game I played, and I played this at Christmas time, and I want to highlight this because it was so cool. Clank in Space, but not playing a board game with other people, playing it on my own. Renegade Studios release. I've got an app on iOS and probably Android. Don't know. Don't use that rubbish. They have several things on there. I mean, they With Clank, they had an app version where you could play it solo and play it as a kind of with other people, and it added elements to it. They brought out a solo version for Clank in Space. And what the cool thing was this with this is, it's a kind of campaign game where you start off with episode one and you play through with one character, and it gives you other objectives to do out in the ship. So it tells you how to build a board because it's modular, which is quite cool. So it tells you what sections need to be in it. Then it tells you, right, you've still got to do the same thing as Clank in Space. Put two module cubes in, steal an artifact, get out. It adds a story thing where it gives you other things to do before you can get out. So it might ask you to go to like the promenade and go to one of the rooms. And once you enter the room, you click on it and it gives you a little kind of spiel what's happened. Then it says, oh, you've alerted the security guards. Now you need to raise the threat level up by one. Or go to the promenade and meet this operative. And then when you go there and you get to the promenade, it says, oh, now search the deck for this character and add it to your hand.
Cool.
And then it gives you kind of etched like a final thing, like another objective for the end of the episode, which gives you more points. Have lots of scientists faction characters in your deck at the end of the game. Or have lots of crystals at the end of the game, which give you more points. So it gives you a score. And then you also get ranked how well you do at the end of the episode. And there's five episodes. It's very Star Wars-esque, if you know what
Star
I mean.
Star Wars.
Yeah, so it's kind of, you get that kind of Star Wars vibe
Han
with this.
Han Solo type.
Yeah, kind of. You kind of think it's kind of like that. It's kind of fits, runs along the same lines, but it's got its own story. I mean, it's not like complete Star Wars, but you kind of play. It's like, oh, this feels like Star Wars a bit. And it's just so cool. It's like when it came out, I thought I'll give this a try. Wife's gone to bed, kids in bed. I thought I'll give this a try. And this is just before Christmas. I think I had loads of stuff to do, but I thought I'd play this. And I think I played three episodes in one night because it was so, I was like, I've got to play another one. And I think I made myself go to bed and I was like, right, I'm going to play another episode the next night, which I did. And then I played the last episode a few days later and I was just so cool. And I actually go back and play it again.
Trying to get a
better record. I mean, no, you get scored like A, B, C kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
And I think I've got A.
What did you get?
A plus in two or three scenarios B's in the other two. I think I got overall A out of it all.
Oh, that's good. Everyone likes a good A grade.
So the app is free. You don't have to pay anything.
Is it free?
Yeah.
And is it released by the publisher or is it?
It's released by Renegade, who are in link with Digital Wolf.
Yeah.
Digital Direwolf. So they create that, who actually helped build Clank as well. So it's really good. If you've got Clank in Space, get the app.
Which you might do if you enter our competition.
Yeah, that leads us on to the last thing of the show.
Yeah.
Where we are going to give away a copy of Clank in Space. Thanks to Christoph from Meeple's Corner for giving us this copy. And you only have to do a few things to enter the draw to win it. And first of all is go to Meeple's Corner and find out how much he is selling Clank in Space therefore. And then keep that information for yourself. And then,
not including postage.
Not including just postage.
Advertised price.
Yeah. And then go to our website, the devondice.co.uk, and find out, first, have we done a review? Which we have. Who did it? What kind of review it was? So is it
of Clank?
Yeah, of Clank. Yeah. Just normal Clank, not Clank normal in Clank, Space. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So you're just looking for Clank, not the Clank in Space. Find out who wrote the review and what kind of review it is, and then while you're there,
and when we say what type, we mean like a written review. Like a
video review
on a podcast or a video review,
first impressions, something like that. It's one of those. So just go there, find out who done it, what type, and then while you're there, click on the subscribe to newsletter while you're there, which also helps. And then email us your answers to comp@devondice.co.uk.
Perfect. And one other thing that we'd like to add as well is I'd like everyone just to write down one thing that they like about the show and one thing that they would improve. That'd be really helpful.
Yes. You could tell us that on the Facebook page or Twitter or anywhere else like that. But yeah, if you want to add it into that email, that's fine. It doesn't count towards the compo. But just those three things. We want price. We want to know who wrote a review of Clank and how. And subscribe to the newsletter. And just for your knowledge, subscribing to the newsletter only gives you an update once a week of what's been released on the podcast or what's been released on the blog. Nothing else. We don't use your email address for anything else. So don't worry about that. You're not going to be bombarded by third party people trying to sell you PPI or other things like that.
Yeah, we do not pass on your details to any other companies, the exception being the winner who will have their details necessarily passed on to Meeple's Corner so that they can have their game delivered.
Yeah. Cool. And that is the show.
And that's it. Happy January, everyone.
Yes. Okay, so that is the show. Thank you for listening. I'm being Joel Wright. You can find me as Depressed Monkey and on Board Game Geek. I tweet as DevonCutDiceUK on Twitter, and the Facebook page is Devon Dice Presents. And he's been
Lewis James, and I do not tweet, twat, or Facebook, whatever, because
he's a loser.
Yeah, apparently.
Anyway, so that's that show. Tune in next month for the episode 45, and hopefully maybe Sam will be back and tell us how his building's getting on.
Yeah, see if his house has been built yet.
So thank you for listening and see you then.
Thanks, guys.
Some people don't understand you, people.
I just
you're so disconnected from the world.
No, it was just when it started, you know, Facebook started being just ridiculous, just advert after advert and clickbait after clickbait. I had an original Facebook way back when at uni, when I used to have like funky stuff written at the bottom of the pages, like the too close for missiles, switching to guns, and all sorts of funny bits. And it was purely just your page that people posted things on your wall. And then they brought out photos, and that was fine as well. And you had your status, and then it went a bit crazy after that, and I just lost interest.
I remember those days as well. It's weird thinking back then.
I've just never worked out Twitter. As far as I can tell, it's just your Facebook status. Why would you want just your Facebook status? I don't get it.
Anyway.
I'm like a dinosaur. Cool. Done.
My voice was going. This episode was recorded on 14th of February, 2018. Wow, why did I put February? January? Celestia. Plus, we have a face-off between Celestia and Ink and Gold. And there's a competition where you can win a game at the end of this podcast. I'm your host, Joel Wright, and joining me in the second seat tonight, it's Dr. Jewish Loans.
That's me. Hello, hello.
Dr. Lewis Jones.
That's the one. Well, either or. The way you've kept me incognito.
Yeah, so this is now his fourth appearance on the show in a row. So you're now really a integrated
6 damage, and you just charge in, just smack him up for 6 damage, and you know, most enemies, that's probably going to have, you know, taken away at least sort of half their life. A couple of times I've sort of one-shotted people if I've got sort of plus 2s, and when I've had a times 2, I mean, that's just, it's just absolutely obliterating.
Click on the link, you'll see it there. Oh, I'll send you the link. You can't click on the link. Yeah, not bad. Okay, so that is the show. Thank you for listening. I've been Joel Wright. You can find me.
I've been Lewis Jones. Oh, sorry. Try it again. Forget that you do all your Facebook stuff. Yeah.
Not.